This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
On Feeding Time this week, we meet Jackie M, who is Malaysia's best ambassador for food in Australia.
They were mostly well known for sotong giling. They had this roller thing, and then they'll grill it and then have a special sauce, really spicy shrimp paste-based sauce over it, slathered onto it. But they also did things like rojak and sotong kangkong.
Later on, she shares her deconstructed kaya bread and butter pudding recipe with us.
It's a matter of like half a loaf of bread or something, sliced white bread, just, whip up some eggs, throw in some sugar, and throw in half a jar of kaya or something like that, mix it up.
But first up, here are my restaurant reviews for the week. Even the heart of Chinatown is not immune to the ongoing domination of Kuala Lumpur by modern bistros. And in Jalan Tun HS Lee, the Beatles tune-inspired Lucy in the Sky is but surely winning diners over with the casual charm of its setting and the quality of its food. Backpackers are the obvious target customers, but KLites would also do well to check out the breakfasts at Lucy. Organic ingredients are used whenever possible, and diners can customise brunch plates with 3 items for a mere RM12.90. Ergo, choose your eggs scrambled, poached, fried sunny side up, or done over easy, and match them with buttered corn, healthy lentils, grilled tomatoes, hash browns, mushrooms, or even chicken sausages. Alternately, eschew the big breakfast option and try the French toast that's made with old school Highland bread, the cauliflower, pumpkin, or mushroom soups with muesli bread, or even pancakes that served with delicious raw honey. Lunches at Lucy are simple but satiating. Pastas yield no great surprises, but the pesto is a people pleaser, and at Lucy's is served with sun-dried tomatoes and spinach, while sandwiches, salads, and beef and chicken burgers round up the list. Make no mistake, Lucy's is no frills basic, but sincerely cooked food takes pride of place there, and that should ensure its survival, even popularity in a city with very little tolerance for culinary mediocrity. Lucy in the Sky is located at 167 Jalan Tun HS Lee. It's open from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily, and the phone number there is 03-2022-1526. Now, if you have the courage to hazard the construction and traffic hell that is presently Kota Damansara, then cross-legged is a good bet for a relatively cheap and cheerful meal in a setting that, while not earth-shakingly gorgeous, is nonetheless comfortable and extremely conducive for assuming the eponymous cross-legged position. Breakfast items are prominent at cross-legged, which is hardly surprising since everyone is busy jumping onto this bandwagon. Gossamer light French toast is a highlight, and it's topped with chicken sausages, tomatoes, maple syrup, and lemon drops for a savory sweet taste sensation that won't be quickly forgotten. Broccoli soup is also given a cheeky twist with the addition of prawns, while fruit omelets are boosted with a fistful of oats, nuts, and cornflakes. The signature deconstructed omelets are recommended. Like the French toast, these mini pancake-shaped omelets are cotton puff fluffy and paired with cream cheese and corn, then served with a guava and cucumber salad with a sweet Chinese black vinegar dressing that is a perfect match for the clean freshness of the fruit. Taking the egg treatment one step further, the steamed eggs at cross-legged are mixed with chicken sausage chunks and cubed capsicum and tomatoes, then capped with a cheese crust, and served with crust fries consisting of strips of bread crust that have been seasoned with herbs, butter, and olive oil before being fried. It's playful innovation at its very best, and a trait that is very much evident throughout cross-legged's menu. For the main course, rice infused with smoked chicken essence, herbs, and butter in a stone pan is served with smoked chicken breast slices for a flavor palette that is quietly titillating but extremely satisfying. Try and last till dessert, because the chocolate cookie stacks and the pumpkin and cranberry cake served warm with a wonderfully stodgy pumpkin puree are absolutely fabulous. If this is too winter heavy, try the Earl Grey orange mint jelly that is as refreshing as the name implies. Finish with a hearty hot chocolate with chili and wait for the inevitable food coma to take over. Cross-legged is located at 67-1 on the first floor, Jalan PJU5/21 at the Strand in Kota Damansara. It's open from noon to 2 p.m. and from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. from Tuesdays till Fridays, from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Saturdays, and from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Sundays. It's closed Mondays, and the phone number there is 013-212-7713. This is Feeding Time with Faye. With me today, Jackie M from Australia, top Malaysian chef there who's been a great ambassador for our food over in Australia. Welcome, Jackie.
Hello.
So you're in Malaysia, as I understand it, to do some shoots for some TV shows.
That's right.
What are they?
Oh, I'm very excited about this. We're shooting the pilot of a show that tries to tie in some of my areas of interest, which is travel, mm-hmm. food and mystery, okay. in a nutshell anyway.
So the mystery has got to do with, how shall we say, investigative paranormal activity.
That's right. I was in Seekers last year for 5 episodes, and Seekers is primarily a ghost hunting show. And the team who are involved in the production of this is the same team from Seekers, but we are not doing just ghost hunting. We are tying in, like I said, you know, a travel element to it. Say, for instance, Penang, your home state, go there and talk about what a beautiful place it is, check out some of the sites, you know, check out the food scene. Yeah. And then, you know, we'll sort of like transition to a segment where we say, look, we're going to go to this whatever spot, you know, say Penang Hill, popular tourist attraction, and then we'll talk about the history behind it, how the locals may have some interesting stories about the background and maybe some myths and legends that tie into it. And then we'll say, oh, look, I've got one of the premier investigators in the world, Mr. Rob Demarest, my associate, joining us to investigate with some high-tech equipment to see if there's any validity to some of these claims and that sort of stuff. So that's how we try and incorporate like a little bit of an extra dimension to your normal run-of-the-mill travel show.
So it's a travel show with ghost busting on the side.
Yeah. Again, you know, we're not doing just ghosts. So one of the cases we hope to do is to do with what sounds like a werewolf sighting over in Dalrompin.
You know, werewolf.
Werewolf. So you've heard about Bigfoot in Malaysia. I've had 2 eyewitnesses who've contacted me via Facebook talking about what they've seen on the way driving back between Pahang and Johor and seeing something on the side of the road. So we're going to the national park next week, hopefully, and we're going to check out and see if we come across anything unusual.
Gosh darn it, that does sound exciting. It's quite a departure from food, though. Let's just go back to the whole food thing. I mean, although the paranormal stuff sounds really exciting, I hope you've got some protection against werewolves.
Yeah. But needs protection.
I mean, your family moved to Australia when you were very young?
No, when I was 17 and
17.
A half. So I spent the first, you know, the formative years of my life were all in Malaysia.
Long enough for you to develop a lifelong passion for Malaysian food, I'm sure.
Big time, yeah.
And so how did you get into cooking and being a chef?
You know what it's like being Malaysian, being a transplanted Malaysian, especially if you left the country when you've already spent a lot of like your formative years over here. You've got very close ties to the food scene in Malaysia, and it's pretty much the same with everyone else that I know of. But basically, the way I saw it was because my parents actually came from a street food background in Seremban. You know, my dad and my mom used to push a food cart around, and then they kind of like progressed. But, you know, they were quite heavily into the street food scene. So to some extent, what I'm doing now, I see I had that natural interest and passion for food. And 30 years ago, when I arrived in Australia, there was very little choice in terms of quality Malaysian food. And to me, that was, you know, my opportunity to learn how to make all those dishes I really miss from home. You know what it's like. You know, in Malaysia, we're so spoiled. We never bother to learn how to cook char kway teow. We don't bother to learn how to make our own laksa or our own satay or our own roti chanai. You go overseas, you know, whether it's an overseas student or whatever, and you realize, you know, you don't know how to do all that. So I basically made it my mission over the last 15 plus years to just kind of like learn how to do all this from scratch. So I've kind of positioned myself as a Malaysian street food specialist in that regard.
It's true though, being overseas, there's nothing more effective than honing your skills in Asian cooking than the desire to eat it and not be able to get a good version of it somewhere.
Exactly.
But what sort of food did your parents sell?
It was a very wide array, but they were mostly well known for sotong giling. They had this roller thing and then they'll grill it and then have a special sauce, really spicy shrimp paste based sauce over it, slathered onto it. But they also did things like rojak and sotong kangkung.
Yeah, and interestingly, it's not stuff that you actually make at your restaurant or in your market stall. I mean, you had a restaurant called Jackie M's, right? Which you recently closed. But what sort of food did you serve there?
Oh, my goodness. You know what it's like in Malaysia, you know, when you go and eat out, you get a satay specialist, you get a chicken rice specialist or a ngau lam fun specialist and that sort of stuff. But in Australia, when people think Malaysian, you can't specialize and say you only sell, you know, one thing or two things.
Yeah.
In Australia, they expect a whole array. So I pretty much had to accommodate that. So my menu would have everything from curry puffs, hand rolled, you know, with the spiral pattern, that sort of stuff, to nasi lemak, through to prawn noodles, laksa, just everything, basically.
And did you develop your skills yourself or did you, you know, enlist the help of your parents to teach you how to cook?
I think a lot of my basic skills were picked up just by spending a lot of time in the kitchen with my stepmom growing up in Malaysia. But in terms of actual recipes and that sort of stuff, they were just stuff that I did by trial and error, just going through recipe books and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because over the years, you've come to be known as the Malaysian ambassador, you know, like for Malaysian food in Australia. And why did you do a market stall? I mean, that's quite a lot of hard work, you know, to get up every Saturday and cook for a few hours.
Yeah, it is hard work, but I think it's the perfect, you know, training ground to get a feel for what works in the marketplace. So that's my advice to anyone who wants to open a restaurant in Australia. You get a lot of like Malaysians who go overseas and then think, oh, you know, I really miss Malaysian food. I want to invest, you know, I've got a little nice nest egg and I want to open up my own Malaysian restaurant. But you know from living overseas how there are certain nuances with regards to local tastes and that sort of stuff you have to take into account, you know, when you prepare a menu. And that to me, you know, like I said, running a market stall is a very, very, you know, the entry level is very low. You don't need a huge investment behind you. You just need enough money to cover an investment, you know, some trestle tables and market stall rent essentially, and just being lucky enough to get into a solid market. Yeah. Like I said, it's just been great opportunity for me to be able to just test different menus. You know, one thing that I really found, like you mentioned the early morning hours, that particular market that you attend is a very, very early morning market. And my very first day there, I, you know, being completely oblivious to Australian kind of like dietary habits, I had a really extensive Malaysian menu. I had laksa, I had rendang, I had nasi lemak, things that you wouldn't think twice about eating for breakfast in Malaysia. But then I was there at 7 a.m. in an Australian suburb, and all these Aussies are looking at the menu and saying, oh, it's too spicy for me, you know, I just want to eat breakfast cereal, I just want to eat, you know, bacon and egg sandwich or something like that. If I had kind of like taken the plunge and opened a restaurant, things like that could factor into your, obviously, you know, the success or lack thereof of your operations. But taking that into account and then just gleaning information from direct contact with customers on a regular basis, you start to kind of like formulate ideas as to what will work in an Australian environment versus, you know, what would have been a surefire hit over here in Malaysia.
Yeah, so that's true, because even people like Kylie Kwong that have top restaurants in Sydney, and she still goes every Saturday to a market to cook, because
that's
it
right.
Just gives you direct contact with your customers. You
get
straight away immediate feedback
exactly.
as to what will work, what will not.
That's right.
How long were you doing the market scene for? I mean, how long have you been?
I have done it full time since I came back from the UK. I lived in the UK for a couple of years, since 2001, basically. But before that, back when I was still in Sydney before I left, I used to do it kind of like ad hoc for many years before that as well. Back when I had a real job, they were never sufficiently challenging for me from a creative point of view to kind of like be completely immersed in them. So I would find maybe a monthly market here or a festival there that I'd participate in and just kind of like, you know, work my way into the whole food scene.
And the thing that I understand about your food from having eaten it quite regularly, I must confess, is that you have, over the time, as you have said, adapted it to work for a specific market. So what might people, a lot of people say you must maintain integrity of flavors, but you obviously have a stance that you can't just replicate everything as is because people have different tastes and people have different palates. And in Australia, people like certain things that may not necessarily work in Malaysia and vice versa.
That's right.
So what do you think have been the main adaptations you made?
First of all, I don't eat pork. So a lot of my food has been adapted to kind of replace any pork ingredients with non-pork ingredients. Say, for instance, char kway teow, you mentioned that. That's one of my signature dishes. But you get the hardcore Malaysians who say, oh, it's not char kway teow if you don't use pork lard and if you don't use Chinese sausage and all that. I don't use any of that sort of thing. But the reality is, even here in Malaysia, a lot of the more famous char kway teow stores, in fact, have replaced, you know, pork oil with something more healthy anyway sort of thing. So a lot of these, I wouldn't say myths, but, you know, kind of like traditional ways of thinking how a dish should be prepared, I've basically kind of had to throw out the window by virtue, first of all, of my own personal preference, and second of all, to adapt to local taste, and third of all, because of the lack of availability of Australian ingredients. You can't get proper sea ham in Sydney, so I don't use sea ham. And also, Aussies tend to be a little bit focused in terms of the kind of ingredients they want in their dishes sort of thing. They might be meat-free, but they would accept seafood, you know, so they wouldn't want a mixture of different types of things. Chicken is very popular in Australia, so I do a chicken char kway teow, which obviously is a little bit unusual for a Malaysian, you know. I've had a Malaysian come up to me and say, there's no such thing as a chicken char kway teow. You know, so things like that you kind of have to kind of like basically re-educate and reinvent the wheel a little bit to some extent. But my core philosophy is, I mean, I'm very, very focused on maintaining the, you know, the Malaysian essence in my dishes by virtue of, you know, sometimes you're forced into adapting, like I said, because of, you know, the lack of availability of ingredients. And other times it's just kind of like, you know, yeah, just because you prefer doing it that way and because that's how people like it and that sort of stuff.
So do you get a lot of feedback from, say, Malaysians overseas who go, hang on, you know, that's not how it's done?
Big time, big time. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I have a little bit of a gripe with Malaysian customers because we all think that we're experts in our field, right? And the reality is, and I think they don't realise it, but say when they're eating, a laksa over here in KL, you know, they might go to a particular laksa store who might use something a little bit unusual in the ingredient, and they'll accept it and say, oh wow, this stall is a little bit interesting. Instead of using, you know, coconut milk, they might use fresh milk or something like that. Oh, that's a little bit different. Or they might have crab meat in their laksa and that's a little bit different. Or they might use particular type of noodles in their laksa. To them, oh wow, that's different, you know. But then they go to Australia or they go overseas, to them laksa should be exactly how they had it at their favorite laksa stall growing up, you know what I mean? If you try and do a little bit different, they'll get a little bit upset and say, that's not authentic or whatever. And then I would kind of like turn it around and say, do you realize, you know, there are so many different versions of laksa even within Malaysia. You might have grown up in Johor and only known Johor laksa, but that's quite different to, say, you know,
Sarawak.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. And a lot of Malaysians, in fact, don't really actually know that. They think that's just one way of doing things and everyone else's is wrong.
Yeah, so is the their way or the highway?
That's
sort of
right.
Thing.
That's right. Yeah. I actually had someone email me about laksa. They had, oh, I love your laksa, but, you know, I'm very upset because you don't use vermicelli in your laksa. That's not the authentic way. I was thinking, but, you know, laksa, you know, different versions of laksa use different types of noodles. And to be honest, I didn't use vermicelli because it was just too much of a hassle because my menu was so expansive to have to soak vermicelli, especially just to serve half a dozen bowls of laksa. It's easier for me just to use kway teow or something like that, you know. But yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Adaptation is the name of the game.
Yeah.
Next up, Jackie's going to be telling us how she built up a presence to become the most influential food personality on social media in Australia. This is Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9. This is Feeding Time. I'm Faye Koo. With me today, Jackie M, all the way from Sydney, Australia. We've been talking about her role as a food ambassador in Australia. And you've also recently become the second most influential foodie on social media, which is a huge thing. I mean,
you know, not that I'm humble or whatever, but you know how statistics are. They always say they're lies, damn lies, and statistics. But yeah, when you've used the clout measure, KLOUT, clout measure of influence on social media, somehow I've managed to creep up to the number two spot. Number one is Matt Preston from MasterChef in Australia. So there you have it. Take
is
it for
he
what
even
it's
a
worth.
Chef?
No, he's not. Anyone you know, sort of like to do with the realm of food, apparently.
How did you get into it?
Quite a natural transition for me because I actually come from an IT background. So I embrace social media, you know, with a little bit more gusto than your average Malaysian restaurateur in Sydney. Because, you know, restaurateurs tend to be focused on running their restaurant. I have always described myself as the most reluctant restaurateur in the world because to me, I was dragged into it kicking and screaming because, like you said, I started out in running farmers markets and people started saying, oh, why don't you open a restaurant? Why don't you open a restaurant? And like kind of like, you know, whatever. But yeah, social media is kind of like my bread and butter nowadays. And when Google launched Google Plus, and I know there's a little bit of chatter out there about Google Plus and how, you know, how you measure its worth and that sort of stuff. When Google launched Google Plus, which is essentially their challenge to Facebook a couple of years ago, I was one of the first people to embrace it. And by virtue of having been around since it started, I've managed to build quite a following worldwide.
So you potentially have an audience of 1.7 million people.
Correct,
who can
yes.
then share it onwards and then who knows where that leads.
That's right.
How often do you post videos?
I was posting once a week until the last few weeks because I just relocated and there are some issues with reestablishing my broadband internet connection at my new locale. So hopefully by the time I return to Australia, I will, you know, Telstra will have sorted out my internet connection, but it's been basically on hiatus, you know, an enforced hiatus for the last few weeks. But my last hangout actually, you know, over the course of 4 weeks had over 10,000 people view it, which is fairly decent, I think. You know, some people are now coming out to say that Google Hangouts on air are really kind of like the new public access television. To me, it's essentially me having my own internet TV show.
But is the setup hard for you to film it? Or no. Do you just have a camera, yourself in the kitchen, and off you go?
You know, all I use is a webcam. I use, you know, granted I use a high quality webcam that's than what's built into my laptop, but you could use your laptop webcam. And I had a microphone company called Rode Microphones that very kindly supplied me with a high-tech microphone. But in theory, you can just use the microphone that's built into your laptop. So I was actually quoted in one of the Australian papers a few months ago when they basically explored the whole social media landscape to do with food and all that sort of stuff. I basically said, look, no longer do you need a high production budget and that sort of stuff to create your own TV show. You effectively can do it through Google Hangouts by just having an internet connection and a webcam.
I guess the question then is, in this new time, this new exciting times where you don't actually have to have a TV show in a traditional TV format or a restaurant even per se,
yep.
you can actually create your own TV presence
That's
via,
right.
say, something like Google Hangouts.
That's right.
But how are you going to monetize it? And have you managed to do that yet?
I am just starting to kind of like get into that a little bit, just by virtue of the fact that I've got, like I said, over 1.7 million followers on Google Plus, and I've also got like a sizable followings on other social media as well, mainly Facebook. But that's basically caught the attention of brands and that sort of stuff. And the way I can see how they can be incorporated is by virtue of me maybe say, for instance, you know, Feiku's range of curry spices or whatever. You know, you might say, you know, oh, I want to give you $200 to use my product in your next cooking segment. You know, these are like ways you can kind of incorporate basically try and help to monetize it. In theory, obviously, you get YouTube views, you get enough views, you get paid by YouTube for the number of people who watch your broadcast as well.
Is that true? YouTube
yeah,
pays
you?
Yeah,
you do. Yeah, you have to. I mean, you have to rack up millions of views before you kind of like start making bank.
And have you been paid by YouTube yet?
No, not yet. They always, it's quite funny because they always say, you know, you get like, you know, this month you've earned $35 or something like that. But really, it's negligible. And they don't actually start to pay out until you hit a certain bracket anyway.
Because that's remarkable. I mean, considering you've got such a huge presence, I mean, 1.7 million is no joke. And the fact that it hasn't even fully been explored yet,
no.
you know, the ways that you can exploit
right.
it, the ways that you can monetize it. I mean, obviously, you've got the spin-off. People recognize you. They come to you for food and,
yeah.
and all the rest of it. But in terms of the social media thing, that the fact that it's still so new as a frontier,
that's right.
that you haven't even really realized the full potential of it yet, that's quite amazing.
Correct.
But, I mean, what does the future hold for you? You've closed up your restaurant. You know, you're now a part-time investigative paranormal sleuth. You're a full-time foodie mm-hmm. with a passion still very much intact. So
yeah.
What does the future hold?
Well, you know, I like developing TV projects like, you know, the show that we're working on at the moment. And I'm hoping to do a lot more kind of like, I'm basically, you know, a little bit of a self-appointed ambassador for Malaysia. I'm very, very passionate about Malaysia. You know, I know there are a lot of like, you know, talk about like, you know, a lot of misconception about our country and that sort of stuff. And to me, you know, I've taken it on myself to kind of like set the record straight. You know, a lot of people in Australia, when they think of holidays in Southeast Asia, they think Bali, they think, you know, Thailand and that sort of stuff. But people don't realize how much Malaysia has to offer from a, you know, from a travel perspective, you know, and basically the food tourism is one of the top source of tourism dollars into Malaysia, and I'd really like to build on that. And to do that as well, I'd just like to basically kind of like get people to embrace Malaysian food. So like I say, it's a little bit of an ambassadorial role the way I see it. Ultimately, you know, I'm still funded by my actual, you know, food production sort of thing. You know, people still want to, you know, pay you $10, $20 for char kway teow or something like that.
Australian dollars, please.
Yeah, that's right. You know, no kidding. Hey, wages are very high over there. But just with that sort of funds, it helps me to kind of like explore a little bit, and that helps me come back to Malaysia and just do some filming and that sort of stuff, and hopefully kind of like build some momentum from that. I've put out like an iPad app. It's going to be cross-platform compatible with the next issue onwards, called Truly Malaysian. It's going to have like travel articles, recipes, videos, and that sort of stuff. All that kind of stuff has always interested me, you know, publishing, writing.
Fantastic. So I guess we can expect to see a lot more of you around Malaysia.
I hope so, yeah.
Fantastic. So if anybody wants to find out more about Jackie M, you can find her videos on Google Hangouts, on YouTube.
JackieM.com.au, and it'll have links to everything from there.
So that's JackieM.com.au to find out more about Jackie M's projects. And also Truly Malaysian, in iPad app for a magazine format to do with food and travel.
That's right.
Despite being a food ambassador in Australia for Malaysian food, Jackie is well known for actually giving her own take on food. So not just replicating the food that we have here, but twisting it and tweaking it and innovating it to make it a little bit more interesting, a little bit more exciting and accessible to a wider sort of range of palate. Jackie, you've agreed to share with us your Jackie-fied recipe for, what was it again?
Kaya bread and butter pudding.
Yeah. So take it away.
Okay, sure. No problems. This is based a little bit on the feedback I get even from the Google Hangouts, because my Google Hangouts get a worldwide audience, especially in North America, also in Australia to some extent as well. It's a very, very steep learning curve to get people to start cooking Malaysian food authentically in their home kitchen. You know, I was handing out free samples of curry powders and that sort of stuff at this event just the day before I flew out this last time, and people don't know what to do with curry powder. They think that you kind of like add it like by the spoonful into water and just mix it and you get curry out of that. So the way I see it is like, you know, say for instance, you've got like a Malaysian product or something like that. How do you get people to buy it and use it at home? It's, you know, to me, the easier path is to get them to incorporate Malaysian flavors into their Australian diet or their Western diet. Say, for instance, if you're having a steak, you know, instead of having a mushroom sauce, maybe have something a little bit more interesting. I don't know, like a rojak sauce or something. Or if you've bought some laksa paste, you know, you don't have to hunt down the vermicelli and the tofu and the, you know, the laksa leaves and all that sort of stuff. Maybe just, you know, mix it up into
a
sauce. Yeah, use pasta, you know, that sort of stuff. So I'm trying to be a little bit more creative in that aspect, from that aspect as well. And one of them is kaya. A lot of people, you know, they got introduced to kaya, certainly my customers anyway, through the my kaya, roti kaya that I served at the markets. And of course, you know, growing up in Malaysia, there was no such thing as roti kaya in my childhood. You know, it was something that, again, I adapted when I was running the market because people wanted sweet stuff for breakfast. So I was serving roti canai. And I thought, well, why don't we just kind of like add the two together, roti canai with kaya, and have it as called a breakfast roti, you know, and that's kind of taken a life of its own. But, you know, people would then ask to buy the kaya, but they don't know what to do with it. You know, they'll say, oh, you know, we don't really have roti canai at home. You know, where do I buy roti canai? And then you think like, you know, then it becomes like one thing after another. So you have to tell them, look, you know, kaya you can use on toast. And they was like, oh, wow, I had no idea, you know? And then you say, maybe if you make some pancakes, use it as a sauce for your pancakes or something like that. And ultimately, I figured, you know, the next step is to maybe create recipes around kaya, you know? And the natural go-to one to me is like kaya bread and butter pudding. And bread and butter pudding in, you know, in Western parlance is quite, you know, something very familiar to them. And usually the base for that is custard. So instead of just using custard, it's a matter of like half a loaf of bread or something, sliced white bread, just, you know, whip up some eggs, throw in some sugar, and throw in like, you know, half a jar of kaya or something like that, mix it up, and then soak the slices of bread in it, line a pan, and just throw it in the oven for 30 minutes. There you go.
So easy.
Yeah.
So you basically just have butter, sugar,
yeah, butter, kaya, sugar, kaya,
eggs whipped up.
Eggs, yeah, and you can sprinkle some raisins
soak
over
some
the top
bread,
as well. Yeah,
chuck in some raisins, chuck in some dried fruit.
That's right. That's
stick
right.
Stick in the oven.
Yeah.
Bob's your uncle.
Exactly.
that's great.
And I hope to see kaya flying off the shelves after this.
Well, specifically your brand, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. That'd be nice. There are people out there, you know, trying to think outside the box. But, you know, it's not easy for someone like me because, like, to me, you know, my mission originally was to kind of recreate the flavors of Malaysia, you know. So it's a little bit tricky for me to try and like, think, oh, you know, what do Aussies eat, you know, and how do they kind of like mix and match little thing. But, yeah, you know, it's interesting nonetheless.
Great. Okay, guys, so you have it now. Kaya bread and butter pudding, courtesy of Jackie M. Thanks, Jackie.
No problems.
Big thank you to Jackie M. We hope we'll be seeing more of her in Malaysia. Find out more information about the show. Don't forget to follow us on facebook.com/BFM Feeding Time or follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miss Khoo, that's MISSKHOO, for more show information. Till next week. This has been Feeding Time with Faye on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.